Welcome, everybody. Good to have you here with us on our way to our conversation with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. I want to make you aware of an important event taking place tomorrow night in Baltimore. I'll be moderating a town hall meeting at Roland Park Elementary Middle School in Baltimore City on Wednesday, September the 2nd, tomorrow night at 6 p.m., about testing in our schools. The panel will feature educators from Baltimore City and across the state. We want you to be part of that discussion. To learn more about the event and reserve your seat, visit MarylandEducators.com/testingtownhall. That's MarylandEducators.com/testingtownhall tomorrow at 6 p.m. At Roland Park Elementary Middle. Now we turn our attention, of course, to our mayor, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, who joins us for a conversation for the next half an hour. Mayor, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
And you're welcome. Please join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. You can also write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. People are already tweeting us, at Mark Steiner. We'll get to those tweets as well. But do join us for the limited time we have, 410-319-8888. So what's on everybody's mind clearly at the moment is that there's the hearings are taking place tomorrow morning around Freddie Gray. And I know you can't comment on the hearings itself and shouldn't, but it would be interesting to hear what you have learned in this process since the Baltimore blew up, the incidents between who closed the transportation, who didn't close it, the police reaction, not having enough equipment, and all the rest. So tell me what's changed for you in this since Freddie Gray.
I think we've studied the incident every which way possible, with efforts to make sure that, God forbid, anything like that happen again in Baltimore, that we're better prepared. We haven't had riots in Baltimore in over 45 years. And while you can do a lot of training, when you have officers who've been trained but have not experienced the circumstances for which they've been trained, everyone understands that you learn many things in the execution of the plan that you can't anticipate. We had equipment that was ordered for certain specifications, and then when it was used, it was not up. Much of the equipment wasn't up to snuff. New equipment has been ordered. We had training. The officers were trained for certain types of civil unrest, and we had a different type of civil unrest with the riots that broke out. And additional training has been ordered and implemented. We noticed that there were some breakdowns in communication, and we've worked to strengthen those communication protocols, as well as we've been doing tabletop exercises on with all of our public safety partners to make sure that we've gamed out different situations and are better prepared.
So let me open the phones here before I come back to my questions with our mayor, 410-319-8888. Bill in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you again, Mark. My question to the mayor is this. Now, I talked to you last night in reference to a resolution that you signed on to years ago in reference to the guns and the drugs to see the police department. Now, last night you said that you're not sure what the procedure is in terms of what they do with them drugs and weapons. And I would like to know, why is it after all these years you wouldn't know the procedure in terms of what the police department do with drugs and weapons they confiscate? And what is your position in terms of making sure that there's been some witness the incineration process of drugs and guns is confiscated with the police on the streets, not the police department?
So, Mr. Gooden, my answer is the same as it was last evening. While this is something that is very, very pressing and important to you, since you, since that issue and you have, I haven't seen you in years, and since you were the last one to bring that issue up, no one has brought that issue up to me in the countless public forums that we've had. So it's not top of mind, procedures for disposing of guns and drugs. And I hope you understand that when you're running a $2.4 billion government, there are lots of rules and procedures. And while I'm familiar with many of them, they're not all top of mind. And I do have to do the research, as I mentioned to you last evening, and make sure sure that when I give you the answer, it is informed by a current policy as well as what best practices are. The answer has not changed from last night.
So before I go back to the phones, and I'm going to get back to the phones here, 410-319-8888, I'm curious about where you think we go with all the kind of turmoil around the police in our community. Let me ask a very specific question about that. We've gone through, in your tenure now, we're up to a third acting commissioner. Some people have been arguing this program lately that ever since Martin O'Malley's tenure, with this kind of mass arrests in our city, that community police relations have kind of just gone downhill and suffered severely. And that some would argue even that the police have kind of lost their ability to solve crimes in terms of felonies and because they've lost the basic tactics of probable cause and how to do investigations because we're so busy arresting so many people, nobody knows the community anymore. And given the brutality cases, illegalities of the way people are mistreated in the street. So I'm wondering how we restructure that in the city to make this work again. So clearly things are not out of whack with not being able to solve major cases and with the cases, you know, with the community relations being at such an abysmally low level. So what do you do to change that?
Well, one of the reasons why I ask for the Department of Justice Cops Office to come in, excuse me, with the collaborative review was just for that reason, to get the technical assistance and the support that we needed from community policing experts to guide us through implementing better strategies with the community and the police department. And I've taken unprecedented steps. I don't think any other mayor, regardless of how long these problems have existed, has taken that type of bold action to ask for the Department of Justice to come in with a collaborative view, ask the Attorney General to come in with a pattern and practice investigation. I'm very determined to get this right and to make the reforms that are necessary to bring back trust between the police and the community and make those changes stick.
So, that's when people have been trying to figure out what to do inside. I mean, the eternal problem in the police department, that's a very difficult thing to solve.
It's a difficult problem to solve. That's why I asked the Attorney General to start a patterns and practice investigation, because that's exactly what those types of civil rights investigations do. Get deep inside the department, get deep inside the policies and practices that can be discriminatory, and put together a plan of action for how to correct it.
But meanwhile, we're suffering from this increasing armed robbery rate in the city. The murder rate is really off the charts in terms of the last several years. I mean, that long term project is great. But what do we do now?
So the first part of your question, I thought, was about how we reform the department. If you wanted to switch to a conversation about what we're doing right now with the spike and the surge in crime, Baltimore is, again, unprecedented in its response to this national epidemic of violence. I'm sure you saw the New York Times article that talked about the top 30 cities in the country. Almost every single one of them have had significant spikes in homicide this summer. And while many have tied our issues to the Freddie Gray incident, that didn't occur in every city. So we know that there's something else going on. We've been very determined and intentional about our partnerships to get more resources on the street. We have the war room that has the state's attorney, the federal prosecutors, our federal law enforcement partners, our state law enforcement partners, parole and probation, all of these things working together to focus on our repeat violent offenders, those who have unfettered access to guns and have chosen to resolve disputes in the street with horrific violence. And we've seen progress. We've seen the closure rate improve over the past, I would say, month for identifying and apprehending individuals who we believe are responsible for some of this violence. We have commitments from our federal prosecutors to take more of these cases and to be able to extract these individuals off the street and keep them off of the street. We not only have the war room that is getting attention from public safety officials all over the country, but also the embedded federal agents that have been helpful as well. We know a lot of these individuals, we believe that they've been involved in violence. We believe that they've been involved in shootings and homicides, but without the supporting information, we can't get them off the street. Well, with the embedded federal officers, they're helping us to build other cases against them. Many of these people who have killed someone or shot someone are also involved in a lot of other illegal activity, and they're helping us to build cases against those individuals so we can stop this domino effect that is happening in Baltimore and in cities throughout our country, where we have one incident that spurs retaliation, and it is a unfortunate never-ending cycle until we can extract these individuals or pull these dominoes off the table.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. We'll go in order that you called in. Let's go to Bill, line 3. Hi, Bill, you there? Line 3?
Hello?
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, peace and blessing. Good afternoon, Mayor. I said Brother Bay, maybe she misunderstood.
Oh, Brother Bay, I'm sorry, we had names mixed up. Brother Bay, go ahead. Mayor, you still there?
That's quite all right.
Go ahead, brother.
One of the questions that I wanted to put out to the mayor is that we have a high propensity of recidivism. And one of the things that we believe, there's a group of us who have the experiences of been there, done that, turned our lives around. And when we talk about reentry, one of the problems that we see in the reentry model is that they deal with a population who's going to supposedly be released within 6 months. But those of us who understand, and criminologists would tell you that 90% or 85% of the population is under the auspices of the criminal justice system, is not in the facility, even though they're institutionalized mentally, they are in our communities. So we have written a model called community reentry / no entry, because a lot of the population, the availability, accessibility, feasibility of services does not mean that that population is going to access those services because of all the impediments that they run through. So I don't want to say that we are challenged. We're talking about process and not people in general. We need to change in Baltimore City the paradigm.
So, Brother Bray, let me actually ask a question, though, because we have very little time with the mayor and we have lots of callers. I'm sorry.
Our administration do in reference to changing the paradigm that deals with reentry, because traditionally they deal with a population that's going to be released in 6 months and they go behind the fence. My statement was that 95% of the population that's under the control of the criminal justice system is on parole, probation, being sought on an outstanding warrant in our communities.
Okay.
So we need to modify the aim and the purpose so that we can get the product out of the process there in our community. We need to change from reentry to no entry, and we have written programs to that effect.
Okay, let me let the mayor respond. Mayor?
So I'm a little confused by the question, but what I do know is Renard Brooks, my reentry program coordinator, would be the best person to coordinate to get that information from you so we can respond to your specific program proposal. It's renard.brooks@baltimorecity.gov.
Let me get another call in here, 410-319-8888. Jamila, Baltimore City, you're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jamila. Jamila,
good morning, Stephanie Rollins. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Right. I have left several messages at your office, more or less asking. It really was a shame to go into a begging aspect of wanting to see you, because we met at the shop right there on the west side of Baltimore. My question is in regards to education. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to meet with you. Because due to the fact that I did not get my high school diploma, most people, when they talk to me on the phone, they don't acknowledge me having a learning disorder, which is called Tourette syndrome. Most people don't even understand what Tourette syndrome really is. And I would still like to have that meeting with you. The other statement that I want to make in regards to the police officers coming to my residence, doing a search for some man with a large head opposed to a young man with a premature head. And there's an incident that has taken place with that situation. It took place the night of Freddie Gray. And I didn't have to let them in, but they came in.
Ma'am, do you have a question? Because we really have not a lot of time with the mayor.
That is my question.
What's the question?
To have a meeting with Stephanie Rollins Blake, since we can't get into a lot of detail over the phone, I will let other calls come through.
So I apologize if no one got back to you. I'll make sure that your meeting request has been acknowledged. A lot of times, because of the sheer number of meeting requests that I have, many staff take meetings so we can get to the bottom of the issue. So while I can't promise that I can make a meeting with me happen swiftly, I will ensure that we get back to you about how we can address your issue.
So what there are questions here that we've had people tuning in about housing and about the memos that killed a higher tax on vacants and whether or not how we're attacking the question of vacants in the city. Some people think there needs to be a different tax structure that goes after vacants, the ones the city does not own, which we can ask about in a moment. But doing a different tax structure so we can go after vacant houses in the city and take them back from the owners who don't rehab them and just let them sit idly there.
Mm-hmm. So many people have proposed the alternative tax structure as a means to reducing the number of vacants that we have in the city, and that requires state action. At the end of the day, the goal of that is to do just what you said, to reduce the ability of absentee landlords and speculators to hold on to these properties without fixing them up. And to get at that goal, because I'm sure you realize that there are many ways to achieve the goal, one of the prongs of our very successful vacancy-to-value initiative is the citation that we have with the help of the city council. We have multiple citations that we can give, $900 citations that we can give repeatedly to absentee landlords that will not fix their property, that won't fix their property up. And they'll, because of the citation, they will have to either fix the property up or sell it to someone who will. We've been very aggressive, much more aggressive than I've seen in my whole entire time in city government with our receivership actions going after these absentee landlords. We've been aggressive with the citations, and because of those citations, we've been able to spur more than $100 million of private investment. That means these absentee landlords are fixing up the property or, as I said, selling it to someone who will. And if they won't do either one of those, like I said, we've been aggressive with receivership. So the problem that we have of vacant homes, I'm sure you understand, has built up over decades. And we've struggled in Baltimore to find a response that shows promise and progress. Vacancy value shows both of those things. Not only has it been internationally recognized as innovative government and an innovative response to the issue of blight and abandoned homes, because of its track record, it also shows promise. We've seen in the neighborhoods where we've concentrated the citations, development starting. We've seen where we've torn down, we've done the strategic demolition. We've brought hope back to communities. The challenge is when you have a problem that has existed for decades and you have a problem that is so pervasive that you're not going to see the same level of progress. It's not like flipping a switch. So we have a program that works and that is positive and creating progress, but we still have a lot more work to do because everyone knows how pervasive the issue of abandoned homes are in our city.
When you look at other cities that have used land banks, they seem to be moving much further and faster on this issue than we do here in Baltimore.
I think if you give me a specific city example, I can respond. But just saying that sort of blanket statement without.
Well, I can say that I can look at Atlanta, Georgia. I can look at Genesee County, Michigan. I can look at Cleveland, Ohio, Syracuse, New York.
And you're suggesting in all of those places the progress has been faster than with vacancy-to-value?
Yeah, our city looks horrible. I mean, in terms of vacants, next to Detroit, I've not seen another city as bad as ours.
I don't think the numbers line up to what you're saying. and the problem of our city looking horrible, as you know, has built up over decades. This issue of vacant homes is not new. What's new is a comprehensive and innovative approach to deal with them. So to say the city looks horrible, I think everybody understands that. The issue is what you do about it. And when looking at the whether or not we should land bank, we took a look at those cities, and we also took a look at what we think would work for Baltimore. And the fact that we're seeing progress, the fact that not just regionally, but across the country and outside of the country, people are taking a look at our vacancy to value initiative, to me, suggests that while land banks have worked in other places, it suggests that people all over the country and outside the country recognize that this is an effective tool towards getting progress and our blight elimination.
I'm going to go to the phones here, but the one quick question about that. I mean, but the thing about vacancy values, at least, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but what do they do to help the poor working people of the city? They do a lot to help people with means, with money, to rehab a house and buy it, but do nothing for half the city that lives in deep poverty.
And I understand your question about poverty, but you keep switching back and forth.
No, it's not. They're connected. They're not switching at all.
No, you absolutely are. Because what does land banking do about poverty?
Because you can actually leverage money to allow poor people to stay in their homes in the land, rehab the houses together, which we don't do in this city.
Then I think that you have a misconception about what land banking is doing in those other places.
I don't think so.
I absolutely think so, and I don't think that there's any evidence to show different. The challenge that we have in Baltimore is, yes, we have significant pockets of poverty, but we all know that for the regular American, their biggest opportunity for wealth building is the value in their home. And the value of their homes in African-American communities has plummeted.
Yes,
but
true.
Because of the investment that we're bringing back to these communities, because of the attention that we're showing that wealth go up as property values go up as well. And we're working hard to stabilize these communities with the the fact that the homestead circuit breaker makes even with the value of the property going up, your property tax bill won't go up more than 4% year over year, which helps people stay in their homes while they continue to build wealth.
Let me get a quick question here before you have to run. We have to end this segment. Alicia, line one, you're on the air. Hi, Alicia, you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
We only have a minute left, so I have to have a quick question.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm a homeowner in Park Heights, and when you talk about the vacancy to value home ownership, I've been living there 17 years, and two of the houses next door to me have been vacant for half that time. I've contacted the private owners trying to get them to do something, and when I contact the city offices, they say there's nothing they can do because it's privately owned. So I don't understand what's being done because I don't see anything being done.
Mayor Stephanos Blake,
if we can get your contact information, Mark, from your team,
we can do that.
I can immediately have my team follow up. There are many things we can do, even if the property is privately owned, and I'll make sure that we follow up with you today.
We'll definitely do that. And Mayor Stephanos Blake, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for being willing to go back and forth and take the questions. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye. We will, of course, I wish folks had called in a little earlier, then we could have gotten all your calls through. When the mayor comes on, it's usually only for about a half an hour, so it's hard to kind of squeeze everybody in. So get in there early next time so we can get your questions on the airways. I want to thank the mayor for being here and thank all of you for calling in and helping us get through this half hour with the mayor. Coming up, and when we're returning to the Mark Steiner Show, I talk with the nation's assistant Washington editor, Zoe Carpenter, about many of the issues facing this campaign, from Planned Parenthood to Hillary's emails to Iran and more. Stay with us, 410-319-8888. We'll be right back.